is Cultured Hollywood for Smart People for Thursday, November 15th, 2018. I'm Nico, I'm your host. Back from my weary travels. Yes, that's right. Back in the studio. Back at it again, baby. Let's get this going. Let's get this show on the road. I've just been away for a week. And I apologize if I have left you high and dry of podcast goodness. I know you eagerly await each episode of My Shenanigans from TooManyThoughtsMedia.com. But I'm back, TMT Empire. We're here. Let's get into it. We're going to talk about movies, television, music, and so much more in a way that smart people can enjoy them. I will talk about all of my adventures and hijinks across the country this week on The Nico Show. So if you want to know why I have been away, what I was doing, and there's a couple pretty good stories in there. Check out Nico Show this week on TooManyThoughtsMedia.com, TMT.media, everywhere you get your podcasts. For now, Hollywood. Let's talk about it. Let's get going. Stan Lee is dead. Stan Lee, dead at the age of 95. It's time for another one of those pop culture eulogies. We do this all the time on the podcast when a major celebrity passes away, we figure out a way to contextualize him in the greater world of pop culture and reflect on what he meant to American popular culture in 2018. And I think it's safe to say that Stan Lee meant a lot to pop culture. In many ways, he defined our modern pop cultural era, certainly our modern cinematic era. It is going to be impossible to tell the story of American cinema without including Stan Lee's name. He was that important to it. Even though he never wrote a script for a major motion picture, even though he never directed a major motion picture, the most acting he's ever done was in cameos in several motion pictures. Yet still, Stan Lee remains a force for movies. Every moviegoer, casual or hardcore, knows the name Stan Lee and has probably seen at least 5 to 6 films with Stan Lee in them. That's insane. That a comic book creator in his 90s has achieved total ubiquity. Everyone knows the face, the voice, the catchphrases. True believers, Excelsior. How that dude became an A-list star is baffling to me. It truly is. And I'm sure it's baffling to those of a certain age that can remember a time when comic books were nerd shit. They were on the fringes of culture. You used to shove those kids in lockers. You used to burn comic books in fireplaces. Comic books were not mainstream. You didn't trade them with your friends like you traded mixtapes. And if you did, you were probably ostracized for it. But now you look back at that era and you think, who's getting the last laugh now? That comic book writer you had never heard of in 1985 is now a cultural force that will live on for several decades. Incredible. And you know what? It's important for me to keep this in mind because I'll admit, and maybe I shouldn't admit this, but I'll admit it nonetheless. When I heard that Stan Lee had died Monday afternoon, I sort of shrugged. I did. I knew he was in failing health. I knew that it was only a matter of time. If you were making one of those celebrity death pools that for some reason the internet does, Stan Lee would have been on that list for the last 10 years. You would have just assumed this is the year we lose Stan Lee. So it wasn't particularly surprising. But also, I think I've become a bit fatigued by the Marvel machine as of late. And I unfairly took out some of my frustration on Stan Lee. And it's not fair, but it's true. Every time I saw his mug in one of these movies, every time he made a cameo, whether he's playing a bus driver or a traffic cop or a chef, I rolled my eyes because it symbolized the repetitiveness and the sameness and the factory-made quality of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. every Stan Lee cameo was the same. And that was sort of shorthand for me to say every single one of these movies is the same. They are an additional remake of the same story with similar visual styles, similar plot arcs, similar music choices. And Stan Lee, throwing Stan Lee in there for another, like, half-assed wisecrack was angering. It truly was. It was angering. So when I saw the news, I thought, okay, well, I guess it's run its course anyway. Marvel has grown to be much larger than Stan Lee ever envisioned, so the loss of him doesn't mean all that much. But then I sat with the news for a little longer, and some of my cynicism started to wear away, and I came to the realization that I just explained to you. Comic books were never destined for mainstream appeal. They were never meant to be this big. We were not supposed to become tired of comic book movies. You know, the fact that comic book movies have become like our modern day Steven Seagal movies, you know, factory made, very little artistic merit, same story, mindless viewing. I mean, the fact that comic book movies have reached that level of popularity is insane. And if you had told a kid, by the way, in 1975, while he was reading the latest issue of The Amazing Spider-Man, that one day his favorite stories and his favorite characters would become America's favorite characters, he would have first laughed at you and then said, wow, what an amazing world that must be. Comic books used to be for the fringes. They used to be for the forgotten pop culture fans. And that's good news. Seriously, as tired as you and I may be of these movies, and believe you me, when a new MCU movie comes out, watching paint dry is a reasonable alternative. Like, I do consider it before going to see the next Spider-Man movie, you know? Maybe I'll just paint a little mural on my bedroom wall and just sit there for a little while. Like, that is just as entertaining. But still, the mere existence of these films are Stan Lee's promise finally realized. To make stories and to make films aimed at a maligned audience, mainstream and cool and popular. It's a miracle. It's a straight up miracle. And by the way, these stories, as repetitive as they've become, are incredible stories. They are incredible myth. The characters are revolutionary. The symbolism is forever etched in our pop culture consciousness. It truly is incredible. It's sometimes easy to lose sight of that. But before Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and the rest of the Marvel Comics gang came around, like, comic books were way different. They didn't look anything like they do today. And believe me, I am not a huge comic book scholar. I don't know if I've ever purchased a single issue of a comic. So I am not the best person to eulogize Stan Lee and talk about Marvel's history, but I'll attempt to do so. My understanding of it is before Marvel came around in the 60s or reinvented themselves in the 60s, and Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko developed these characters, superheroes were infallible. They were Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman. Not much nuance, not much depth, not many weaknesses. It was purely escapism. Superman was developed in the 30s in the wake of World War II by, I believe, Jewish men. Am I correct? I'm so bad at this. But my understanding is that Superman was a direct response to the chaos of World War II and the unspeakable evil that occurred in Germany, in Nazi Germany at the time. And so these Jewish boys developed Superman, who was the Man of Steel, no weaknesses, from a different planet, nothing but unadulterated good. That's what Superman was. Wonder Woman, a similar thing. A feminist icon, born out of suppression, strength, power, no flaws, no scars. And even Batman, rich dude, had a lot of money, built a lot of expensive toys. I love Batman as much as the next guy, but still, not as much nuance in those stories as you had with Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four, the X-Men. I mean, hell, Spider-Man was a high school kid. The conflict in the Spider-Man comic books did not just arise when Spider-Man fought Dr. Octopus. It also arose from high school shit. Falling in love with Mary Jane, asking her out to the dance, getting picked on by bullies. Stuff that every comic book fan surely related to. The Fantastic Four, although they had some pretty cool powers, they were a family. Brother and sister, who bickered like siblings do. Again, more relatable than a man from Krypton could ever be. Bruce Banner, the Incredible Hulk, that's a scientist with an anger problem. Nothing noble about him. He just destroyed and happened to fight the bad guys every once in a while. The nuance, the reality, the universal nature of these stories cannot be overstated. As much as a guy like me wants to sit on his stupid podcast and be cynical about the life of Stan Lee and wants to poke fun at those cameos and poke fun at the MCU and roll my eyes whenever another comic book nerd sheds a tear over this guy, we need to be honest with ourselves. This guy was very fucking important. Monumental, even. Rest in peace, Stan Lee. He seemed like an incredible man, a kind man, a generous man, someone you wanted to be around. And although he didn't mean a ton to me, he certainly meant a lot to a lot of people. And I can respect that as a pop culture fan myself. So he will be missed. I did want to mention, by the way, just briefly. For some reason, I think people forgot about this credit in Stan Lee's resume. Does anybody remember the show Who Wants to Be a Superhero? Anybody remember this show? What year was this? 2006. I think it had like two seasons. Yes, it did. It was on the Sci-Fi Network in 2006. And again, this was somewhat before the Marvel craze, right? I mean, Iron Man came out in 2008, so that's when the MCU started. I guess people knew who Stan Lee was because Spider-Man had come out and he had cameos in those movies. But this was a show on Sci-Fi where Stan Lee was a judge. And there were 10 contestants vying to become Stan Lee's next superhero. That was the thing. So they developed their own superhero, and they made their own costume and their own superpowers and their own mythology. And they came and competed as that superhero in a number of tasks. And if I remember correctly, they were pretty silly tasks. It was like help an old lady cross the street. Or, you know, save a burning building or something like that. But they were, like, heroic tasks. And there were plot twists along the way. I think at one point, Stan Lee had sent a mole to infiltrate the superheroes. And he went by a name that was traitor spelled backwards. And it was like, ha-ha, fooled you. You know, it was like a very cheesy superhero twist. But again, I don't remember exactly what the criteria was, but at the end of the show, whoever was declared the winner would have their character printed in a comic book. And I think they also got like a sci-fi movie out of it, you know, and they would like become the face of that superhero. It was pretty incredible. I need to go back and watch that show because I remember there being a lot of unintentional comedy on that reality show. You know, it was right in the height of like those experimental Basic Cable, reality shows. You know, everybody was looking for their next apprentice or their next survivor. There was, I remember there was like one chick named Fat Mama, and she was like an overweight mother, essentially. And her superpower was like donuts. Like she had like a donut that she threw around to defeat bad guys. And then there was this other guy that was like an electricity dude. He like conducted electricity and like shocked people. It was pretty great. Two episodes of this show. Highly recommend Stan Lee's Who Wants to Be a Superhero. That, I think, will be my fondest memory of this man. I don't think I love any of the MCU movies as much as I love Who Wants to Be a Superhero. Check that out. We'll also be doing a Stan Lee movie for Why Is This a Thing next week. We had to skip this week because I was out of town. Next week, check it out. Why Is This a Thing? I don't know what we're doing, but we'll have to do the worst thing that Stan Lee has ever put his name on to honor the man. So that is this Wednesday on Why Is This a Thing. All right. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, plenty more pop culture goodness is around the corner. It's cultured. We'll be right back. Before we move on to some more stupid stuff, and believe me, there is plenty of stupid stuff to go around, I do feel the need to at least bring up the biggest story in the news this week. And it's certainly a story that affects pop culture and affects those living in Hollywood in a very profound way. But the LA wildfires have just been insane. The Southern California area has experienced the deadliest wildfires in the state's history. Dozens have lost their lives. Hundreds have lost their property, their homes, stuff that they'll never be able to replace. It's unimaginable is what it is. I mean, you know, I was scrolling through Twitter. What was it? Sunday night when it really got bad. It was either Saturday night or Sunday night. Just watching those clips. And I think we've all seen them by now. But those like minute long clips from inside the fires as like campers and other people that lived in the area are trying to escape. And there's traffic backed up for miles as flames engulf the cars and you're barely able to see 2 feet in front of you because of the smoke. I mean, it's literally hell. If you were in that area while a fire was ravaging your home, you're literally experiencing hell. It doesn't look like Earth. It doesn't look like something that would ever happen on this planet, you know? And I just put myself in that position and think, wow. Man, I don't know if I would have the strength to deal with this. Like, I don't know if I would have the poise and the emotional maturity and just the calm demeanor that some of these people had during what is probably the most traumatic moment of their lives. Like, it's truly crazy, man. And I know it's kind of inappropriate to bring it up as a pop culture topic because that's what everybody reported on this week. It was like, oh, Lady Gaga lost her home. The Kardashians lost their home. Caitlyn Jenner, Martin Sheen. I mean, we were talking about how all of these billionaires are now going to have to do major renovations on their mansions, you know, even though they have massive insurance policies that pay for all of the repairs anyway. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I know it's inappropriate. Obviously, these people are just as traumatized by the Joe Schmoes that live in a $100,000 two-bedroom home. Like, I get it. You know, this is not meant to make light of what these celebrities are going through. But at the same time, I mean, like, these fires are happening in Malibu and in other affluent neighborhoods. So it's a flashy story. It's a TMZ story. You know, it's easy to get distracted when you hear that the Bachelor Mansion might go up in flames next week. You know, like you're sitting there and you're anxious about it. Oh, what are they going to do for the next season of The Bachelorette? How are they going to go on? And in that distraction, you'd sometimes lose sight of the fact that, oh yeah, regular people live in LA too. People without multi-million-dollar insurance policies. Maybe they're just out there camping with their families. They're never going to be able to recover from this. And while Kim Kardashian and Kanye West hire their own private firemen, I think that's what they did, right? Like they hired like private sector firemen. While they're doing that to protect their multi-million dollar mansion, Joe Schmo is trying to figure out where his family's going to sleep. You know, so my thoughts and prayers do go out to the good people of L.A., despite what some politicians have said this week about the matter. It's a horrible thing. It's an unimaginable thing. And I do hope that this nightmare ends for you soon because, you know, there's another season of The Bachelor right around the corner. Sorry. Let's talk about Breaking Bad. Let's do it. Back in the Breaking Bad world, Better Call Saul just ended, but AMC will not allow us to forget that Breaking Bad was a thing that we all loved. They just won't let us forget it. They continue to dangle it right in front of our faces, you know? Dangle the idea of a sequel and a prequel and a retelling and a reimagining of this universe. And like the consumer that I am and like the Breaking Bad super fan that I am, I can't help myself. I want more. I mean, I was as skeptical towards Better Call Saul as you were. But with each episode of that show, I am reminded to trust these guys, to leave my skepticism at the door, and to trust that Peter Gould and Vince Gilligan and the other minds in the Breaking Bad writers' room have a plan and would not tackle this story if they didn't feel like there was enough meat on the bone. Better Call Saul is not nostalgia bait. It's not a quick buck. It's not a reboot for the sake of ratings. Better Call Saul is its own story worthy of telling. And so when I heard this announcement that Breaking Bad is developing a Jesse Pinkman sequel movie, my first reaction was not skepticism. I was trained to react another way. After four seasons of Breaking Bad, I have been assured that I am in trusted hands. Vince Gilligan would not be working on this script if he didn't think he had a story to tell here. If there wasn't a new approach that he could take. If we weren't going to learn something new about these characters and about this world. Sure, I felt like I got enough closure in the Breaking Bad finale. Like, I thought Jesse's story ended in a, like, fairly satisfying way. I mean, there was ambiguity, certainly. It was an ambiguous ending. We didn't know what happened to him after he drove through the gates of the Nazi compound. But, like, that was okay with me, man. Like, I love No Country for Old Men. I love the end of The Sopranos. I love ambiguous endings. Ambiguous endings are sometimes more effective than endings with closure because they allow you to come to your own conclusions and they leave you with the sense of endless possibilities. A bright future, a dark one. Joy, hope, or despair. You fill in the blanks. I mean, that's life. You don't know how life is going to end. You don't know how your story is going to end. And by the time your story does end, you're the only one that doesn't know it. Life is not a three-act structure. Life goes on. Life has uncertainty. Life has mystery. And that's why I've always embraced ambiguous endings. I've always embraced an ending that catches you off guard, goes to black 5 minutes before you think it's supposed to. I think that shit's great. I think it's one of the great aspects of storytelling, perhaps the most underrated aspect of storytelling, especially on television. You know, I think somewhere around like 2000, when rabid fan culture started to immerse television with like The Sopranos and Lost, and now Game of Thrones, we developed this sense that everything has to end with a bow on top. You know, like writers are obligated to wrap up their endings in a neat way so the audience is satisfied. Like, audience satisfaction is more important now than it's ever been. And you're going to see that with Game of Thrones, by the way. Like, the Game of Thrones finale is not going to satisfy everyone. But I'm afraid that the writers on that show are going to turn into fan expectation a little too hard. You know, they're perhaps going to go with the least controversial option so fans can walk away from that show feeling satisfied. And I don't know if that's like the point of television. I don't think it's ever been the point of television. It's certainly not the point of storytelling. Like, stories are supposed to challenge you. They're supposed to subvert your expectations. They're supposed to surprise you and tell you something you didn't know. Right? So that was the one aspect of the Breaking Bad finale, specifically the Jesse Pinkman ending, that felt unique and felt ambiguous and felt like, yeah, anything can happen here. Who knows where Jesse's going to end up? Who knows if he's going to get taken into custody 2 minutes after leaving the compound? Who knows if he's going to be killed? Who knows if he's going to live a happy and healthy life for the next 20 years? And all of that lived in my own head, and I was okay with that. But it turns out Vince Gilligan wasn't okay with it. And the Breaking Bad writers' room was not okay with it. And AMC was not okay with it. They thought there was more to this story. And although my gut reaction might not be as optimistic as the rest of you, I do understand. These guys know what the hell they're doing. They do, man. No one thought Better Call Saul would be necessary. No one thought it would reach the levels that Breaking Bad did. And we were all proven wrong. This movie, whatever the hell it is, whether it's a theatrical release or whether it's a AMC special, I will watch it with open eyes, with excitement, with joy, with a sense of mystery. I cannot wait to revisit this world. I cannot wait to revisit the Jesse character. I cannot wait for Aaron Paul to take up that mantle again. It's going to be great. It is. It's going to be great. And if you don't believe that it's going to be great, you're a fool. You haven't been paying attention closely enough. Breaking Bad's coming back. Sign me up, baby. Sign me up. I have no hot takes on this issue. I don't. I have nothing. You know, AMC, by the way, has been sort of walking a fine line here. I will say that. I think sort of micro, this is great news. Jesse Pinkman sequel movie, Vince Gilligan revisiting the universe. Like, great, 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 great. All good. We're going to enjoy it. It's going to get great reviews. It's going to get acclaim, maybe win some Emmys. Awesome. But big picture, macro level, AMC is now experimenting with this TV movie thing. Have you noticed this? I'm a couple weeks behind on Walking Dead because I find that show insufferable now. But they just got rid of Rick Grimes. And they didn't kill him off. Instead, what they're doing is a trilogy of Rick Grimes solo movies. Is that what's happening here? AMC is producing three Rick Grimes movies that are, I guess, separate from the timeline of Walking Dead and that tell his story after leaving the group. So, like, okay, cool, whatever. Like, if that's your jam, go for it, AMC. But at the same time, like, how isn't that an episode of Walking Dead? Like, just because they're 2 hours long, that means they're not an episode of Walking Dead anymore? It stars the main character from The Walking Dead. It happens after the events of The Walking Dead. Walking Dead is still on television producing episodes without him. I know you're working around Andrew Lincoln's schedule. I know he didn't want to be on the show anymore. But, like, what's the difference here? Like, you're sort of blending the line. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be blending the line. I mean, television continues to reinvent itself every year. And these streaming services and these cable networks are trying to figure out a way to break the mold because no one's quite sure what the mold is anymore. So, all right, if that's what you want to do, like, make your movies, but it's sort of hard to tell where a television show ends and where a movie begins. It's very confusing. I don't know. Some part of me just thinks, you know what? Just, like, make Mad Men. Make another Mad Men. You know? Quit trying to build the Walking Dead universe. Quit trying to build the Breaking Bad universe, as much as I enjoy it. And just, like, make another great Emmy-winning prestige drama. Just give us Mad Men again. And I don't need a Mad Men sequel. I'm good with Mad Men. Let's just get another one of those. Like, is it that hard? Like, I don't know. Whatever. Like, what? AMC had two hit shows. People love them. People will never stop loving them. People continue to watch them on Netflix. And so they're just mining that ore for all it's worth. Good for them, I guess. I don't know. What do I know? I don't run a network. We got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about television and a trend that I'm not sure is disturbing me, but is certainly perplexing me. We'll get to it after the break. This is Cultured. Stick around. All right. Okay, so I've been watching this show. I've been watching this show on Amazon called Homecoming. Amazon Prime. Yeah, you know. The service that sends you trash bags when you've run out. The two-day shipping shit. Well, they're producing television shows now. And quite good ones, might I add. High-quality television shows. Check out Amazon Prime. There's some good shit on there. But I'm watching this television show on Amazon starring Julia Roberts called Homecoming. And this is all crazy enough as it is. This is all absurd enough. It's on Amazon, and it stars Julia Roberts, who was arguably the biggest star in the world in like 2003. Nobody bigger. Aaron Brockovich. Like, Julia fucking Roberts, man. Huge, huge star. Pretty woman. Love me some Julia Roberts. But now she's on television with that service that sends you garbage bags. And she's on this show directed by Sam Esmail, the creator of Mr. Robot, one of my favorite shows on television. And based off of a, get this, 10-part fictional podcast. We're basing TV shows off of podcasts now. Let that sink in, folks. Let that sink in for a second. These two guys, let me pull up their names. I have forgotten their names, and I apologize, because give them credit where credit is due. These two guys, Micah Bloomberg and Eli Horowitz, created this podcast, and it's a fictional podcast with a serialized story. Oscar Isaac was in it, and Catherine Keener, and I think David Schwimmer, too. That was like the cast. And it was essentially a radio play, one of those old school radio plays. All audio and a mystery unraveling over 10 episodes. And I guess it was a hit podcast. I hadn't even heard of it. But I guess it did well enough in audio form to justify a television remake. And now it stars Julia Roberts, biggest star of 2003, Bobby Cannavale, who is like one of the great character actors working today. For some reason, this guy is not a massive star. He's like the 10th lead in Ant-Man for some reason. But Bobby Cannavale is incredible. Shea Whigham, Silver Linings Playbook, Boardwalk Empire, another great character actor. And Sissy Spacek, who is having a great year. Sissy Spacek, man. She's in Homecoming. She's in the Castle Rock Stephen King television show. Apparently, like, acting her ass off in that. So it's this show, Homecoming, and it's incredible. Like, it's remarkable. The direction is spectacular. Sam Esmail directs the shit out of these things, as he did with each season of Mr. Robot. The visuals are stunning. The performances are so unique and idiosyncratic and detailed. I mean, Julia Roberts is really good in this. Shea Whigham as this corporate slave, man behind a desk who is just like investigating complaints for the Department of Defense. He's awesome. He's like just such a cool character. And then Bobby Cannavale is off the walls and they're just letting him like just shoot threes the entire show. Like in each scene, he just crushes it. It's a physical performance. It's a commanding performance. It's bouncing off the walls. It's energetic. So incredible performances. And above all, it's just a great vibe. It's a great hang, this show. You know, it's a vibe that I had not felt in a while, but it was nonetheless familiar. This is an old school noir story. This is an old school Orson Welles, Alfred Hitchcock noir mystery with provocative music cues and intrigue and mystery and suspense. A lot of questions, not many answers. And that is very unlike Mr. Robot, by the way. Like, Mr. Robot is a modern story. It is a story for 2018. There are science fiction elements. There are ambitious narrative choices. It's unconventional. A lot of times, modern day news stories are incorporated into the fold. So you really feel like you're watching the show in 2018 and you're watching a story made for 2018. So this is a decidedly different project for Sam Esmail, and it's not a show that he created. Again, it's based off of the podcast. But the guy is such a versatile talent. The guy is so good at what he does. He just has an eye for these things. He understands mood. He understands tension. He understands filmmaking. And that's what Homecoming is. It's a 10-part film on television. And above all else, it's based off of a podcast. Like, what? What? Like, listen, man, I'm old enough to remember when podcasting was a punchline. I'm old enough. You know, similar to what Stan Lee felt about Marvel Comics in 1965. I was on this train long before America was. Like, I hate to be the dude I called it guy, but that's what I'm going to be now. I called it. I've been doing this since 2012. I've been listening to podcasts since 2008. You know, it's only in recent years that podcasting has become this mainstream. But similar to how comics have now taken over popular culture, podcasting is going to be the next thing. Let me run down a list of podcast-based television shows, okay? I just did a quick Google search on this list. Some of these shows have yet to debut. Some of them have already had multiple seasons aired on television, okay? So in addition to Homecoming, there's this show, Alex, Inc., that debuts in March. It stars Zach Braff, and it's about a guy named Alex Blumberg who started his own podcast company. That's the show. And about how he builds a podcast empire. On HBO, there's this show, Two Dope Queens, with Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson. Very successful talk show in audio form, has now become an incredibly successful talk show in video form on HBO. Pod Save America, another one on HBO, political podcast starring former Obama speechwriter, John Favreau, I think his name is. That's a show I had listened to previously, is now on HBO. The Read, another show on HBO with, what is it? Kid Fury and Lena Waithe is a series based around Kid Fury's life and podcast, covering everything from random sightings of New York City rats, hip-hop, and pop culture's most trying stars to on-air therapy sessions. He and his co-host Chrisley can be caught throwing shade and spilling tea with a flippant and humorous attitude. another podcast on HBO. The show Lore debuted last year on Amazon based on a horror anthology podcast. Season 2 debuting soon. Marin, starring Marc Maron, based on his podcast WTF, debuted on IFC in 2013. Comedy Bang Bang. Tonight, I just saw there was this show called Up and Vanished. Or maybe a couple days ago. Up and Vanish, based on a popular podcast. It's a single special airing on Oxygen tonight. This is crazy, man. This is insane. This is insane to me. Considering, again, that I've been doing this shit, geez, for what, 6 years? I've been doing podcasts for 6 years. I've been listening to them for 10. I grew up listening to these things. I've developed many very close friendships through podcasting. Rob on 2 Cents Radio, that was a show I listened to as a kid. Now we're very good friends. We do that podcast together on Too Many Thoughts. It's very funny what sticks, man. It's very funny the sort of stuff that becomes mainstream and that makes it through the pop culture filter. It's funny what the public embraces and what they choose to cast aside. Because before, podcasting was just a hobby. It was just something that a bunch of friends would do in their bedrooms. They would get together, get some cheap-ass microphones, upload the MP3 file for free. And it was nothing more than that. And hopefully 10 or 20 people would listen to it. Now, like, it's a career. It's something people build careers on. There are podcast producers. There are professional podcasters on Kickstarter and on GoFundMe. And what's the other one? On Patreon. And now, if your podcast is successful enough, Julia Roberts will star in a television show based on that podcast. What kind of universe are we living in? What have I missed, man? What have I missed? What happened? Because I used to get picked on for these things. I still get picked on for these things. Oh, you're another dude with a podcast, huh? You think you're going to be the next Joe Rogan, the next Marc Maron, the next Bill Simmons. Good luck with that one, chump. Go back to the AV club. You know what I mean? But now all of a sudden, it is mainstream. Pop culture is a weird thing. Hollywood is a weird thing. Trends are a weird thing. Podcasting is the next one. Who would have thought? One more break and we'll be right back with more Cultured. Stick around. All right, let's hit a few quick topics and then we'll get out of here. Star Wars. I know it seems like we discuss Star Wars each and every week on this podcast, but like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as we were talking about earlier with Stan Lee, Star Wars is among the most popular, prolific, in-demand franchises in the history of cinema. People love it. It used to be nerd shit. It ain't nerd shit no more. All right? Everybody is clamoring for the next Star Wars spinoff movie. Apparently, that's all the rage these days. After a, I would say, modestly successful spinoff run. I guess they only made 2 spinoff movies. Yeah. After they attempted these Star Wars stories with Rogue One and with the Han Solo prequel, Star Wars is deciding to course correct. They said, we're no longer going to do the Boba Fett spinoff. We're no longer going to focus on the other anthology movies. Instead, we're going to focus our attention on not one, but 2 streaming television series for their upcoming streaming platform, Disney Plus. Yeah, Disney Plus. They announced that too this week. Sort of burying the lead there. Disney has been working on this for a while, an over-the-top streaming platform where they can host their entire video library, going back to Mary Poppins and Snow White and Cinderella and stuff as new as the new Pixar movies and, in this case, the new Marvel and Star Wars movies. Everything with a Disney stamp on it will be moved to this platform. It was previously announced that Jon Favreau would be working on The Mandalorian, a spin-off set between episodes 6 and 7 of the Star Wars universe. And now, after this week, we have learned that a second spin-off is in the works, this time starring Diego Luna, who played the character of Cassian Andor in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. This series will be a prequel entirely about him and his adventures as a spy and thief amidst the rebellion. I got to be honest with you. When I heard the headline, Cassian Andor series in the works, I had to admit, I have no idea who Cassian Andor was. I had no idea. I'm still not quite sure. I vaguely remember this character. I saw this movie once. I didn't quite like it the first time. I have had no plans to revisit it since because it's a snooze fest, in my opinion. It's a drag. It's boring as hell. The third act is cool, but until then, it's just a lot of talking about, like, maps and shit. And I wasn't into that. Listen, I love the idea of a Star Wars war film. I mean, it's got wars in the title, you know? So I was all in on a gritty Saving Private Ryan story set in a galaxy far, far away. But this movie had a lot of behind-the-scenes problems, and those problems showed themselves clear as day in the final product. So, forgive me, man. Cassian Andor is not an action figure sitting on my bookshelf. I don't remember this guy. But it turns out there is enough story there for a television series. The second television series for Disney Plus. It's an interesting strategy, I'll admit. I don't know if this is going to work for them. It certainly worked for Marvel. Marvel said a few years ago, and obviously, like, Marvel is the exception to the rule when it comes to these things. Like, no other franchise has been able to create a universe that's as sprawling and diverse as the Marvel Cinematic Universe is. And we sort of forget that it's because Marvel put in years and years of work. There was a lot of preparation involved. There were several films before the Avengers came out. There were several well-established films before they started to dip their toe in the television waters. I mean, now we sort of just take it for granted. There are Marvel shows on Hulu, and Marvel shows on ABC, and Marvel shows on Netflix. And it's like, yeah, this was always destined to work, but this was never the case, man. This was thought to be an expensive experiment that was going to turn out to be a disaster. But ever since then, Marvel has become the biggest thing in the world, and every other major property has tried to duplicate that formula. And it's an impossible formula to duplicate if you're not willing to put the legwork in. Right? Like that. We're seeing this with DC. Like, DC just thought, oh, we got to catch up with this cinematic universe shit. Cinematic universes are all the rage these days. Quick, get me a Justice League movie. Call Zack Snyder. And it's like, bro, it took a while for Avengers to come out. There were two Iron Man movies before Avengers came out. Like, we got to know Tony Stark, and we got to care about Tony Stark. And we got to care about the Hulk and Captain America and Thor. The shit takes time. And yeah, Daredevil was fine for a couple of seasons, but even Netflix is realizing that this model isn't sustainable. It's expensive to make a shared universe of television shows. A lot of resources are funneled into that. Right? So it's important to say that, you know, Marvel is an exception to the rule, not the rule itself. Right? So yeah, Star Wars has a deep catalog, a deep bench of characters. All the most successful directors on the planet seem to want to make a Star Wars movie. It doesn't seem like they're having trouble attracting talent. This Jon Favreau show has an incredibly impressive slate of directors lined up. So, yeah, this is well-positioned to work, and I am sure that Disney Plus will work at first. But it's not going to be all sunshines and rainbows. Since buying Star Wars, Disney has already experienced a number of massive failures. Kathleen Kennedy of Lucasfilm, the overseer of this universe, knows firsthand how difficult it is to color outside the lines. Solo was a massive flop. That movie had big stars. The lead was one of the most popular characters in the history of cinema. But audiences didn't see any lightsabers. They didn't see any Skywalkers. They didn't see any of the familiar beats that are characteristic of a Star Wars movie. So they stayed home. Jesus, there wasn't a single industry insider that thought that that movie would bomb. Nobody thought it would bomb. That's a layup. Han Solo prequel? Sign us up. But it's tough. It's tough when you color outside the lines. It's tough when you make too much, when you oversaturate the market and try to broaden your horizons too quickly. Right? So this foray into television, yeah, it might work. Might Disney Plus, it might work. But what if one of these shows sucks? What if The Mandalorian is a flaming pile of trash? What if it's another Solo? What if it's another Rogue One? What if it is as controversial as Star Wars Episode 8? I love that movie, but still. Like, there's a lot of risk here. So the idea of just greenlighting anything with a Star Wars label on it, the idea of producing a television series with the sole intent of selling action figures is severely flawed. This could blow up in their faces. There is no one on the planet, unless they are the biggest Rogue One superfan in the world, there is no one in the planet that remembers the name Cassian Andor. No one. They might remember Diego Luna was in that movie. They might remember that he was charming and wisecracking and one of the best parts of that movie, but Jesus, there's nobody clamoring for this story. So it better be good. It better be good. That's what I'm saying. That is my message to Star Wars. If there is any advice that I can give you, corporate overlords that are worth billions upon billions of dollars, let it be this. The key to solving Star Wars is to hire ambitious, creative, talented filmmakers and letting them do their thing. That's it. Don't fire Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Don't fire James Mangold. Like, let these people do their thing. Give them the tools that they need to make their art, because quality will always supersede corporate interests. Always. I want to give a shout out to someone who did the right thing this week. And by the way, we live in a world where very few people do the right thing. So this was a breath of fresh air, to say the least. This was great. This never happens. Both parties, in the wake of a controversy, somehow came to a compromise and laughed it off and hugged, and it was beautiful. It's everything I want Hollywood to be. Every time I see a think piece or a blog post or an angry podcaster rant about something, all I want is for the controversy to resolve itself like this one. I just want to see everyone hug it out and forgive and forget. Is it that hard? Is it that hard? Like, we're human beings, people. We're human beings. We're just trying to get by like everybody else. We're just trying to make it through the day without pissing someone off, without trying to die, just making a good living for ourselves and the ones that we care about, right? That's what everybody's trying to do out here. And sometimes we make mistakes. And sometimes we say the wrong thing. And sometimes we offend, right? Not everybody's going to love everything you ever say. Nobody's going to love everything about you. That's life, man. That's life, right? So when this shit happens and there's outrage, most of the time it's fake outrage. But when outrage exists, it seems like everybody on the planet gets it wrong. Well, this week, Dan Crenshaw got it right. Dan Crenshaw got it right. So Dan Crenshaw is the representative from Texas who's a former military veteran and who lost his eye while in combat. 3 days before the election, Pete Davidson of SNL decides to poke fun at Dan Crenshaw's physical attribute. There's a controversy. There's Twitter outrage. People denouncing Pete Davidson's joke. How dare he mock the troops? It's a media circus for a few days. Then the election happens. Dan Crenshaw wins re-election. Was it real? I'm not sure if he was serving already or he was a first-term guy. Forgive me if I got that detail wrong. Regardless, Dan Crenshaw wins his bid, is asked about the incident by a local reporter, and says, you know what? I could make a big deal about this. I could denounce Pete Davidson and his harsh words. I could make a larger point about liberal Hollywood and their disrespect for the military. But instead, he elects to say that Navy SEALs don't get offended. It's time to move on. It's time to forgive. It's time to forget. Fast forward 4 more days. There's Dan Crenshaw on SNL, side by side with Pete Davidson on Weekend Update, roasting him, taking some shots back, laughing it off, hugging it out, controversy over. Beautiful. Seriously. Why can't everybody do this? Why can't... Oh, I know why. Oh, that's right. I know why. Because our two-party political system is broken. And because political tensions haven't been this heated in over a decade. Oh, yeah. That's right. We're tribal animals that huddle into our own teams and yell at the other side because they have a different color associated with their name. Yes, of course, because we vilify the other side, because we refuse to extend an olive branch, because this is a cultural war. This ain't just politics. We're out for blood. Yes, of course. Unable to see past our differences. Silly me. I forgot. I have forgotten. Excuse me. Excuse me and Dan Crenshaw and Pete Davidson. You know, God forbid. God forbid a comedian makes a bad joke. The comedian lets the guy who he roasted take a shot at him. They shake hands. They hug each other out. They forgive because they know that at the end of the day, they're just two people trying to do their jobs and do the right thing. Of course. Of course. You know what? I'm outraged. I'm going to go right now, head over to Vox and write my angry think piece. It's time. This was so great. I want every controversy to end like this, but we can't because we're too self-serving and we're too selfish. And anything and everything that is said in the public is ammunition for the cultural and political war. It's unfortunate, but God bless Dan Crenshaw. God bless Pete Davidson. I'm glad this stupid controversy is behind us. I am. It's great. And then, oh yeah. Oh, I wanted to end on this. there were a number of movie trailers that dropped this week and I watched them. There's a new Dumbo trailer. Tim Burton directed another Disney live action remake. Danny DeVito is in it for some reason. I'm sure it'll be delightful. Toy Story 4 dropped a teaser trailer. It didn't show any footage from the film, but it hinted at some new characters that might be making an appearance. I'm sort of against the idea of Toy Story 4 on principle, but I'll see that movie. It got me excited. But there was a third trailer that I want to highlight right now. It's called Detective Pikachu. Now, look, folks. Nerd to nerd here. Like, I grew up playing a lot of Pokemon. Okay? I love me some Pokemon, man. I'm a Charmander guy all the way. I love me some Charizard. I love catching them all, baby. Pokemon Go was a fun time a couple years ago, too. All right, so I love me some Pokemon, and I have been longing for the Pokemon live action movie for several years. But the fact that this is the version that we're getting, the fact that this is Pokemon's first foray into the live action cinematic game is so confusing. What is this trailer? What is this? What? Am I the only one? What's happening? Everybody was like, oh, look at how cute Detective Pikachu is. What? So here's the movie. Here's the movie. I guess this is another detective story because it's impossible to just make a movie about, like, cute and cuddly monsters. Like, instead you have to put a crime backdrop and make it a noir story. So a crime has been committed in Pokemon Land, and Will Smith's son is on the case. And then Will Smith's son stumbles upon Pikachu, who has a detective hat on and enjoys investigating crimes, and he happens to be voiced by Ryan Reynolds. And unlike Bradley Cooper in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, you know, who like attempts to voice Rocket Raccoon with a voice different than his own. You know, like when you hear Bradley Cooper as Rocket Raccoon, he's not Bradley Cooper. You know, it's its own character. It's its own performance. Ryan Reynolds just elects to do the Ryan Reynolds thing. And it's like Deadpool is playing Pokemon. And he's just inserting slightly mature, witty commentary into the cute and cuddly Pikachu character. Who thought this was a good idea? I will reserve judgment, I guess. I will reserve judgment until this movie finally comes out. But what is this exactly? Like, what is this supposed to be? Is this supposed to be a deconstruction of the Pokemon mythos? Is this supposed to be Pokemon for adults? Because all of those sound like terrible ideas. I seriously don't get... Whose idea was it to cast Ryan Reynolds in this shit? Whose idea was it to let Pikachu talk? It's like when... Remember when Blue's Clues changed to a live-action show? I'm sure you guys weren't even watching at that point. But I watched Blue's Clues way late into my life. And there was a point in time when Blue started talking. The show became like a live-action puppet show. And so Blue would talk to you. And it ruined the entire mystique of Blue's Clues. It ruined the whole thing. What was that? I'm used to her just saying, pa-pow! Blue's could do, we can too. I hate this. I am peeved by this trend of cute and cuddly child stars all of a sudden speaking like adults. I hate it. I just hate it, man. I don't like it. Detective Pikachu. What was that trailer? It looked terrible. And how many sons does Will Smith have, by the way? I'm assuming that's Will Smith's son. I think his last name was Smith, right? I think that's what it said in the trailer. I could be totally wrong. Hang on, let me just fact check that because that might be a slightly racist thing I just said. Pokemon star. Is it? It's not Jaden Smith, right? I think it's another Smith. Okay, yeah, Justice Smith. That's right. I'm not crazy. Yes, Justice Smith. Is he Will's son? I'm not sure. Let me just check this. Yeah, he kind of doesn't look like his dad, if that is who that is. No, not at all. Not Will Smith's son. My apologies. I just assumed. I did. Oh, he actually had to tweet about this. Look at this. Oh, wow. Well, okay. He wasn't the first one. Hey, guys. Love you. I'm not Will Smith's son. If you come up to me telling me stories of my father, I will have no idea what you're talking about. I apologize to Justice Smith, not Will Smith's son. I'm sorry. Good luck to you and your detectiving in the latest Pikachu movie. Best of luck solving that crime. All right, that's going to do it for culture this week. We went a little long. The first snowfall of the year is coming outside. I hate the Northeast, man, with a passion. I'm sure I'll talk about that and many other interesting stories tomorrow on the Nico Show. Check that out, TooManyThoughtsMedia.com or TMT.media for more of my shit. It's all up there. At Funny Nico Tweets, email me, Nico@2centsradio.com or NicoDiGregorio7@gmail.com. I think that's the better one. Yeah, I don't think at 2 cents radio works anymore. I don't think that site exists as it once did. R.I.P. A lot of fun stuff still to come. I know it was a painful week off. You didn't get any of your Nico goodness, but now I'm back and better than ever. A week's worth of podcasts are on their way. Subscribe to each and every one of them wherever you get your podcasts. And folks, I do hope you come back next week. Because then and only then will you and I get cultured! See ya!